My guest is one of France's biggest stars, Isabella Gianni. In America, Gianni is best known for her starring roles in the films The Story of Adele H., directed by François Truffaut, The Tenant, directed by Roman Polanski, Nosferatu, directed by Werner Herzog, and Ishtar, directed by Elaine May. Americans will soon be able to see Gianni's latest film, Camille Claudel. It won 5 Caesars, the French Oscar, including Best Film and Best Actress. It's also France's official entry for Best Foreign Film at the upcoming Academy Awards. The movie is based on the life of the French sculptor Camille Claudel, who lived from 1864 to 1943. She was Auguste Rodin's first female apprentice, then became his model, muse, and for 15 years, his lover. Her own work was eclipsed by his. When she left him, she lived in isolation and poverty, and became convinced that Rodin and his supporters were conspiring against her and her work. In 1913, her family had her committed to an asylum. She remained institutionalized until her death. Claudel's work has recently been rediscovered through a touring exhibition of her sculptures and a biography written by her grandniece. The film Camille Claudel is directed by Bruno Newton and stars Gerard Depardieu as Rodin and Isabella Gianni as Claudel. It was Gianni's idea to make the film. I asked her why she wanted to make it and if she identified with Claudel.
She was a good purpose for a wonderful part, and she was also, most of it, she was this wonderful woman who struggled to get her independence as an artist during her life in the 19th century. And she was a sculptor, which was very uncommon at the time. And she had this wonderful passion with Rodin, and she had everything in life to be a success and to do well and to have a happy life. She was very gifted, and she started very early as an artist, and then everything went wrong. And I was very interested in that. I mean, how come a story can become a tragedy when it starts like a fairy tale? I mean, why does that happen in someone's life and in a woman's life?
Mm-hmm. Now, I think her work was recently discovered by people in the United States because of this touring show and because of the recent book about her. But I was wondering, growing up in France, if you were more familiar with her story than most Americans have been.
Oh, sure. There are several biographies about her, about 5 books by now. That were written about her, but we only discovered her in 1984. She was unknown to the French before, and it was just an incredible surprise because she was Paul Claudel, who is a very, very famous French writer, sister, and her existence had been hidden for, you know, years and years, and all of a sudden, the existence of this wonderful woman pops up, you know.
Do you see Camille Claudel as a feminist film because it's in part about how her work was eclipsed by the work of Rodin, who was her lover for 15 years?
It's a film about a woman, so I don't know if a film about a woman becomes a feminist film because it's a film about a woman, but it focuses on this woman and the way she sort of got abused by her brother, abused by Rodin, her lover, and I mean, she was an extraordinary woman. I mean, it's a feminine film. Not a feminist, I think, in terms of accusing every man to be responsible for her fall. You know, it focuses on everybody's weakness and the bad ways, the bad behaviors some had with her. But she's not a victim, and that's very obvious in the film.
Now, I believe it was you who initiated getting this movie made. How did you begin? What did you do first?
I had to buy the rights to one of the biographies that was written about her. That was written by one member of the family called Rain-Marie Paris, and I had to address the family because we just couldn't do the film without reproducing the statues if the family didn't agree. And we just couldn't talk about, you know, sculptor's work without showing their work. It would have been just silly. And I had to buy the rights to that, and it was very interesting to meet this family who felt very guilty and wanted to make sure the film was not going to be terrible for them. And then I started to put the money together and ask Bruno Nuitén to direct the film. And a screenwriter called Marilyn Golden, who's American, to participate to the writing. And I sort of, you know, tried to produce it and produced it. And then someone else co-produced it with me, and before starting the shooting, because I needed to concentrate on, you know, being an actress only during the film.
Did you know that you wanted to get Gerard Depardieu to play Rodin?
Yes, I wouldn't have done the film without Gerard Depardieu, and Bruno Nuitén neither. We both were convinced he was the really most perfect actor for the part, and he was just very generous with us. He accepted to be less important, you know, in the story, and participate he participated to the film with wonderful energy and enthusiasm, and he believed in the project from the beginning, and it was just great support.
Sometimes he seems to be in nearly every movie that's made in France. Did he have a long list of films he was already committed to when you asked him to be in this one?
Well, actually, he was finishing a film that had been very, very hard for him. He was very, very tired, and he wanted to take a year off. So when I asked him to do the film, he said, "Oh no, this is just the wrong time. I mean, maybe next year, maybe. I mean, well." And I said to him, "Oh, well, we won't do the film. I mean, just forget it. I mean, we are so ready. We just can't wait anymore." And I felt, it's the first time in my life I didn't feel like an actress anymore. I just felt like a producer trying to convince another actor, you know, to be with us, and not respecting, you know, what the actor wanted, which was to not to make a movie. And we convinced him he was, and then he... It was great, and he never took a rest.
Actress Isabella Gianni is my guest, and her new movie is called Camille Claudel. There are certain similarities between your new movie, Camille Claudel, and one of your first movies, or perhaps your very first movie, Adèle H. Now, Adèle H. was based on the story of Victor Hugo's daughter, and Camille Claudel and Adèle H. were contemporaries. In fact, there's a Victor Hugo's funeral is one of the events that happens during the story of Camille Claudel. And now both of these women spent the last few decades of their lives in mental institutions, and in both movies, you had to play someone going mad. Adèle H. was shot when you were 19. You're in your 30s now. Has your sense of how to play somebody going mad changed as you've gotten more mature?
Well, you know, the story of Adèle H. was about someone's obsession. Adèle Hugo was very obsessed with this man she was in love with, and obsessed with trying to forget about her father, who was this great man. And she was quite neurotic. I mean, at the moment... when the film starts, I mean, she's obsessed from the beginning to the end. That's not the same with Camille Claudel. She's very healthy, full of life, very energetic, not neurotic at all, young girl. She's 17 when the film starts. And then she becomes damaged by life as the film goes on. But I don't think she was mad. I don't think neither of them was mad.
Whether you call it madness or not, certainly Camille Claudel loses her bearings in the latter part of the movie. How do you prepare to play someone in that state?
Well, you have to upset yourself sometimes, and you know, and accept that. You know, and go through something consciously painful in order to give as much truth and credibility to your acting. But that's part of the game, you know. And the game is cruel sometimes. But actually, I was very familiar with her, with her persona before the film started, because I had been... giving some attention to, you know, the writing that was being made about her, I mean, you know, the screenplay. And I sort of got very familiar with her. So I was not scared of anything. And neither, I was not scared of the bad moments I would have to go through, you know, as an actress in order to put her pain to life, or her tough moments into the light.
In 1975, when you were starring in The Story of Adele H., directed by François Truffaut, did he give you any advice that stayed with you about how to play that role or how to prepare for it?
I was very worried at the time. I was very worried, you know, not to be good enough and not to do the things right. And he's always told me, well, don't worry, I'll frame you the way, I mean, I'll just do things right for you. And you don't need to worry too much about what you should do, etc., etc. And I do, and he taught me a sense of humor, you know, in order to de-dramatize whatever you have to go through as an actress, or you know, he took he loved actors. He would he took our work very seriously, but at the same time, he didn't want actors and actresses, and he didn't want me to get you know, to suffer too much for and from what I had to do. So one day, I remember, there was a scene, I had to go to the bank and get some money out of the bank. He said to me, and I kept asking him questions all the time, you know, why does she do that? Why does she think that? And et cetera, et cetera. And he said to me, well, do you know why she's going, with a very serious look, he said to me, well, what do you know why she's going to the bank? And I said, no, expecting some kind of very, very deep explanation. He said to me, well, she needs some money. And, you know, that's something that stayed with me. I mean, you know, sometimes that's it. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about one of your earlier films, Nosferatu. This is the 1979 film directed by Werner Herzog. And I think it's perhaps the most moving and deeply thought out vampire film I've ever seen. Mm. It's very much about the pain and degradation of living forever while feeding off human blood. And it's also about the adaptability of evil, how it spreads like the plague. I'm wondering what the atmosphere was like on the set when you were making the movie, if that sense of evil, you know, was something that was talked about a lot during the making of it, or if it was a very moody set, because it's a very moody movie.
No, I'm going to disappoint you. We had a lot of fun on the set. I mean, Klaus Kinski, who was doing Nosferatu, is very... he loves to joke and he loves to have fun, and he just was making fun of himself, you know, disguised as a vampire. He had to wake up and at 3 a.m. go to the makeup room and then become this monster, and we just laughed a lot about it. And Werner Herzog was very serious about the meaning of the film, and I think one serious person was just enough. we had a lot of fun. We sort of, we did.
I want to ask you about a specific scene. There's a scene near the end where you want to kill the vampire by seducing him at the break of dawn. And if a vampire sees the sun, he kind of withers and dies. You know, the rules of the vampire game is that he's got to be back in the coffin at sunrise. So so you're really kind of giving your life in a way to kill the vampire. And there's a really eerie, beautiful scene toward the end there where you kind of, you know, lay down for the vampire and you take your long hair and move it from the side of your neck. Would you tell me a little bit about that scene, about preparing for that scene and how it was choreographed?
Well, from what I remember, it was... actually, when you say choreographed, it's a very good word, because it was like some kind of dancing. And the lighting was very important, I remember. They were very careful about it. And the costumes and our attitudes were very expressionist, like in German films. And that's what we kept in mind to do the scene. But I do also remember Werner Herzog, not Werner Herzog, but Klaus Kinski's teeth being very, very, very long and having problems not to laugh while he was biting my neck.
Well, you'd never know it watching the movie.
That's what's so nice about it, isn't it?
Now, I understand that both Nosferatu and Adele H, Nosferatu is shot in German, Adele H in French, that they were both shot in simultaneous English versions. How do you go about shooting a simultaneous version in English?
I hate it.
So you have to do every scene a second time
again,
in English?
Yes, I hate it. I think it's very bad for a film because it's like making two films at the same time. And it's just, I think it's a bad idea. I don't think that should be done. I don't like to do that. I won't do that anymore.
Who sees the English versions? Because I've only seen the subtitled ones. I think in video stores they have the dubbed ones. What do they do with the English version?
I have no idea. They put it in the garbage basket, probably. I mean, they try it, but I think it never works. I don't know of any movie that it worked for.
So do you feel like you give your all to the original language version and then do a kind of second best job?
Absolutely,
when you're doing the English,
right,
for it?
I do. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. 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 Isabella Gianni is my guest. How many films a year do you make?
I do about maybe one film every 3 year, 4 year. I don't know. I don't work very much.
Why is that? I'm sure you get offered a lot of roles.
Well, I love to spend a lot of time on one film. I love to think about it, dream about it, work on it. And it takes time, I think. It's very rare to be offered something that's ready to go and that's just wonderful for you. And I love to enjoy life too, you know, not lose contact with reality and spend time with my friends, my family. I mean, do what I want to do, read, travel. I mean, anything that can make my personal life, richer and more enjoyable. And I don't want to become a movie freak.
The American movies that I know you've been in are The Tenant and Ishtar. Now, Ishtar was such a big Hollywood story a few years ago when it came out because it was this really expensive production and it was a real box office flop. I was wondering, when you were making Ishtar, if you had any idea that that was going to happen, if you could tell that it was going to end up being a bomb.
Well, let's say that I never had any hopes for Ishtar. I never spent time having hopes for it. I sort of enjoyed it as Dustin Hoffman did, as a nice holiday in Morocco in the desert. And I think there's a very positive side to Ishtar anyway, because it took Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman and myself to want to make other films and go back to work as quickly as possible. And Warren Beatty did it with Dick Tracy, Dustin with Rain Man, and I did with Camille Claudel. That's what Ishtar did for us.
Tell me how you started acting. You were very young.
Well, I started as a child when I was 12. In a movie with children, I mean, that I did during a summer holiday. So it was not a problem for my parents for me to do that because I was a good school student. And then I did another one when I was 15, again, during holiday. And then I started... by chance, I mean, I met some people who sort of were working with the Comédie Française, which is a national theater in France. And then I entered the Comédie Française when I was 16, and I became a classical actress by accident. And then I worked there for about 2 years and a half, and then did a film that François Truffaut saw, and then he hired me for The Story of Adele H. Everything went very fast, and in a very fairy-tale-ish way. It was a very nice time.
Now, I understand that when, I guess you were still a teenager, you were offered a 20-year contract with the Comédie Française, mm-hmm. and you turned it down?
That's right.
Oh, I was really shocked that there are such things as 20-year contracts.
Yeah. Well, the French are very, very conservative, and they want to... you know, make sure you'll be with them for a long time, if that's what their rules say, you know. If in the theater in France, I mean, the National Theater is very, very conservative. I guess like the Royal Shakespeare in England probably is. I mean, that's very European.
Now, you recently revealed, this was in the past couple of years, I think, that your father was Algerian. In the past, the press had reported that your father was Turkish. Now, the Algerians are pretty much a persecuted minority in France. Why had you before said that he was Turkish and not Algerian?
I didn't. The press did.
Oh, I see. They just assumed that.
That's right. I don't know where it came from.
What made you decide to publicly correct that and explain your father's origin?
Well, actually, in 1986, there was a terrible wave of racism, particularly against Algerian immigrants, and there was an incredible anti-immigrant propaganda. And I thought it was completely outrageous and horrendous. And I started to say, well, my father was Algerian. And in order to, you know, and to make these people aware they were not, you know, alone in this country. That's why I did it.
Well, Isabella Gianni, I thank you very much for talking with us.